All right, we're ready for Numbers 29 to 32. For those who are visiting with us, we are in a Bible survey. We're about to wind up in the book of Numbers. Starting January, we will get into the book of Deuteronomy. So next week, we'll look at Numbers 33 to 36. This will wind up the book of Numbers, and we will be done. In fact, we are done with the wilderness wanderings. We're wrapping up some details toward the end of that in these chapters tonight and next week. This is the outline we are following, one of the two outlines we're following. This is from J. Sidlow Baxter, and we're in that final section of the new generation. We had the old generation, the numbering of the new generation, and now this is the new instructing. I like the way he outlines that, and I'll forego Wiersbe's outline on this. Let's not review every chapter, but we're going to hit some of the high points of the book. In interest of time, because we have so many chapters. Chapter 1 dealt with the first census. Chapter 2 dealt with the separation by camps. Let's come down to chapter 6. Nazirite vow. We talk about that often through the Old Testament. There will be, and the reason I say we talk about it often, not that that many passages address the Nazirite vow, but there will be places that we'll come to that we'll wonder, could this be the Nazirite vow? And we'll be talking about this text. All right, chapter 7 dealt with offerings for the leaders. Let's come down to chapter 10 now. Silver trumpets and the departure from Sinai. So up to this point, they've still been at Sinai. They're leaving Sinai and headed toward the promised land. They're not yet sentenced to the wilderness wanderings. We'll get that a little bit later. So chapter 12 dealt with the people complaining, or chapter 11 rather. They're complaining again in chapter 12. Chapter 13 is a notable chapter. Why? Spies sent into the land. And so there were some that were very pessimistic. In fact, all of them except for Joshua and Caleb. Yeah, the spies sent into the land. All right, let's skip chapter 14, 15. Let's come to 16 now. What was 16 about? Rebels in the wilderness. Who died and when the earth swallowed them? Three major characters, others with them, but those three major characters. All right, those three were the leaders. All right, let's come to chapter 20 now. All right, what happened with Moses there in chapter 20? All right, very good. Chapter 21, they're journeying toward Pisgah, and that's the story of the fiery serpents. Chapter 22 had to do with Balak making the request to curse Israel. So 24 and 25 go together. It deals with how many prophecies? Four prophecies, two in chapter 23, two in chapter 24. Let's come now to chapter 26. Second census. Let's back up one chapter. What happened in 25? Because that's significant tonight. Yeah, there's harlotry in Moab, and there were some people from somewhere else than Moab involved. Midianites. Yeah, we'll get to that in our study tonight. All right, that gives our review of the chapters. Let's come to chapter 29. What's chapter 29 about? Question number one for tonight. All right, it has to do with feast offerings. Chapter 30. All right, laws about vows, chapter 31. All right, the Midianites defeated, and then chapter 32 is, all right, the tribe settling on the east side. So here's a summary of those four chapters. And so on a cursory reading of this, we may wonder, we're reading along and we're following a narrative of the people traveling through the wilderness, and they sin and they're punished and they complain. And then all of a sudden you come across a chapter like chapter 29. And here's feast offerings and the laws about vows. Then we go back to this narrative and we wonder why. Much of the book of Numbers from beginning to end is preparatory work to enter the promised land. Does that make sense? There's the census starting in chapter 1. There's the census again. How many fighting men do we have? Because that's what the census was about, not the total number. But how many fighting men do we have? And they start making their way And because of their complaining, there's the wilderness wanderings, which is not a lot said about, but nonetheless, that's about a bunch of people dying off, so they're getting ready to enter the land. So we come to chapter 29 now, and these feast offerings have to do with preparatory things for the conquering into the land. Not that you need to make a feast so you can conquer, but once you're in the land, there's going to be feasts to be kept. The same thing in chapter 30 concerning the vows. Here's some regulations and some rules with reference to once you get settled in the land and you marry, etc., there are vows that you must keep, and here's how God views that. Does that make sense? Then we go back to the narrative concerning the defeating of the Midianites, chapter 31. All right, let's go to question number two. What offering, or that should be plural, offerings were to be made at the Feast of the Trumpets, verses 1 to 6. Say again. All right. Anything else? Let's talk a couple of things. Very good. Let's talk about the placement in the calendar with reference to these feasts. There's the Feast of Trumpets. You're going to come back and see that slide here in just a moment. You see this calendar all the time in our studies, particularly in the Old Testament. And if you're not familiar with it, the outside circle is our, starting with January, February, March. Come around here to September, and here's we are at the seventh month. Now, that's not the seventh month for us, but the seventh month for them was the month of Tishri. All right? That month began with the Feast of the Trumpets, right in the middle of the circle. This was the beginning of the Jewish year. Now, that was not the beginning of their sacred year, but the beginning of the Jewish New Year, and it was following their harvest. Now, we'll talk more about the harvest in a little bit later, in just a moment. But there was the Feast of the Trumpets that began on the first day of the seventh month. Then there's the Day of Atonement on the 15th day of the month, and then there's the Feast of Tabernacle that lasted for 8 days. Does that make sense? This is where we are in their calendar year. All right, let's talk about the Feast of Trumpets. Now, get ready to flag some things, as we often refer to it, in the book of Leviticus. We're introduced in Leviticus 23, so you might make a marginal note, and you might turn over to the feast mentioned in chapter 23 of Leviticus and tie those chapters together. The value of that for me is so that in the future, when I'm studying or somebody asks me about the feast over here in Numbers 29, I know to go over to Leviticus 23. Or when I'm at Leviticus 23, I'm reminded to go over to Numbers chapter 29. Make sense? That helps. At least it does for me, may not for you. But anyway, Leviticus rather, 23, starting at verse 23 through verse 25, is where the feast was mentioned of trumpets. Now, what's going on in the Feast of Trumpets? Well, not much is said in Leviticus 23, but it was a day of jubilee. It was a day of celebration. But it marked, this seemed to be a memorial, in fact it was a memorial, mentioned at verse 24, that marks the end of the summer and the end of their harvest. And so it's celebrated, and it's starting this holy month, the seventh month that we just saw on the calendar, it's starting that beginning of that Jewish year. And so now we have some instructions found over in chapter 29 of Numbers. So let's quickly get what we have there. This is the beginning of that holy month. So on the first day of the month, they have a holy convocation. What is a convocation? Gathering or an assembly. We're going to list four mentioned in this chapter. And so try to flag those as we go along. Here's on the first day of the month, they have a holy assembly. And this is the day of the Feast of the Trumpets. So they're blowing the trumpets in celebration of starting this feast. Now, what's to be done and what's to be offered? They're offering a burnt offering, one young bull, one ram, seven lambs, without blemish, offering the best they have. And then it talks about their grain offering shall be 3/10 of an ephah. An ephah would be equivalent to 15 liters or 4 gallons. Now, you may have looked that up in another source, and some go as far as 5 gallons. Some come as far down as just a little less than 3 gallons. But generally, I think 4 gallons is the accepted, kind of like a cubic. A cubic it varies depending on who talks about it, but generally 18 inches is accepted. And so 4 gallons is approximately what that refers to, dry measure. Now, let's flag 10 times if we haven't already done it. Let's go to question number 5, what does the word besides tell you about the commands of God? We dealt with that last time. Somebody remind me. When we see this word besides in these two chapters, 28 and 29, what does it tell you? Who's that, Jared? Go ahead, Jared. Oh, Philip, I'm sorry.
In addition to.
In addition to, absolutely. That here is a command God has given you like a burnt offering. Then here's this other offering. And so when God gives this offering, that doesn't negate the first one you have. This one is besides that. We flagged a number of those. There are 10 tonight we want to flag. So let's flag the first one here at verse 6. We'll flag them as we come to them. So there's your first of 10 tonight, besides the burnt offering. So here at the beginning of the feast, I'm trying to get the overview and not the details of everything of every feast. But at the beginning of this Jewish New Year, they have the celebration of the blowing of the trumpets. This is starting that month. They have a holy assembly. And here's the offerings that are to be given. And now that's besides that burnt offering that was mentioned earlier. Make sense? And one of the applications, for those that weren't here last time, we made of that quite often. Someone says that I know God tells me to worship and assemble and serve the Lord, but I also have an obligation to work and take care of my family. And that's true, but that requirement is besides any other requirement. Does that make sense? All right. All right, any questions on the Feast of Trumpets? Let's go to the Day of Atonement. Now, the Day of Atonement is mentioned in two places in Leviticus. You tell me where they are. The most notable will be Leviticus chapter 16. Very good. Leviticus 16. What verses? All of them. The whole chapter is devoted to the Day of Atonement. So we don't have time to go through all of Leviticus 16. So you tell me, basically, what was the Day of Atonement? It took place on the 10th day of the 7th month. It would be when, there are other things went on, but primarily the high priest made sacrifice to atone for sin, thus called the Day of Atonement. Now, so it would be to appease the wrath of God. He would go into the holy place and make an atonement for himself and for the sins of the people. So Leviticus 16, you might want to make a marginal note of that. Now there's another passage in Leviticus where we just were, and that's Leviticus chapter 23. All right. So let's go to Leviticus 23 and flag the verses there that deal with it. And we're at Leviticus 23 beginning at verse 26. Through verse 32, and it mentions there the Day of Atonement. So here's the Day of Atonement mentioned there. And so that was a one-day thing. It was on the 10th day of the month. And again, you have a holy convocation. So there's the second of four times that we're having an assembly. So on the first day of the month, they have a holy assembly. Blow the trumpets. And that's the Feast of the Trumpets. And make sacrifices. Well, on the 10th day of the month is the Day of Atonement. And so let's see what he says about the Day of Atonement here in our text. Let's go now to chapter 29, beginning at verse 8. They're going to present a burnt offering to the Lord. What else do we see? All right, a grain offering. There's to be the bull and the ram and seven lambs without blemish, meaning they're offering the best. There's the grain offering. Again, there is an ephah, three-tenths of an ephah for the bull. That is, the grain offering is three-tenths of an ephah. We've already given the measurements for that. Now, here we are at verse 11. Here's the second of 10 times we see the word besides. The one kid of the goat as a sin offering besides the sin offering. Making sense? So here are feast offerings on the Day of Atonement. Now, this gets a little more interesting here when we get to the Feast of the Tabernacles, beginning at verse 12. It starts on what day? On the 15th day of the month, and on that day they have a holy convocation or holy assembly. So that's your third of four. Making sense? We're going to flag them here in a moment, all together in just a second. So beginning at verse 12, we have the Feast of the Tabernacles, which begins on the 15th day of the month. Now they're going to have a feast that lasts for 7 days. Actually, the 8th is mentioned, but they start, meaning 7 additional days, because it starts on this 15th day. So the 15th day is the first day that's mentioned here. So we have it divided out from the first through the 8th day. Does that make sense? So let's see what happens on those days. Now, so let's go back and flag another passage. Let's go back to Leviticus 23. If you make a marginal note, Leviticus 23, verses 23 to 47. And we don't have time to go through all of that. But beginning at verse 23, all the way through verse, 47, it's verse 44, is the day of, the Feast of the Tabernacles. It lasts for a week. And so what was this all about? What was the Feast of the Tabernacles all about? This was when they would dwell in... Absolutely. It was a reminder of the wilderness wanderings, the difficulty. So they'd dwell in booths or tents or what we might think of something of a brush arbor. They were to dwell in primitive structures. And so as they do that, there's some offerings to be made for each of those days. It also marked the end of their harvest. And so here they are at the end of their harvest season, and here they are in the 15th day of the month. So they've already had the Feast of the Trumpets, the Day of the Atonement, and now this is the third Holy Assembly, and now they're going to celebrate for a week. All right? So let's see what happens on the first day. What happens on the first day? Offering a burnt offering. And it tells them what they're to offer. And we're going to get the numbers in just a moment and compare those from to each day. Now let's flag another time we see the word besides. Look at verse 16. What is this? Is this number 3? Yeah, this is number 3 of the 10. That one kid of goat offering besides the regular burnt offering. All right. Now then, on the second day, what was to be offered? Let me put this up this way. This is I had AI to draw me a diagram of the offerings. And so you have down here, starting with the bulls, and then we have the rams, and then we have the lambs, and then we have the goats. So on the first day, there was 13 bulls. There were 2 rams. Now the number of rams doesn't change every day until the last day, to the 8th day. But the number of bulls changes every day and goes down until the 7th, to get down to 7, then it drops down to 1. The number of the lambs doesn't change every day, nor does the number of goats change every day. So we'll rather than go through each one of those, that's the numbers. That makes sense to you? All right. So let's flag again at verse 19, the word besides. Verse 22, again, the word besides. Let's go again to verse 25. You'll see the word besides. Verse 28, the word besides. It's on the 5th day. On the 6th day, let's drop down to the 7th day. You have the word besides. Let's finish those out. We have one at verse 38 and one at verse 39. If you're missing the 10, I'll just quickly mention again those verses. That's very helpful for me to look at that. We have one at verse 6. We have one at verse 11. We have one at verse 16, 19, 22, 25, 28, 34, 38, and 39. Should have 10. All right. Now then, when we come to the 8th day, the 8th day is mentioned down at verse 35. There again, on the 8th day, they have a sacred assembly. It's a different word, but it's still an assembly. And so, I'm going to come back to the chart you just saw. Here are the 4 assemblies for the month. On the first day, on the 10th day, on the 15th day, and on that 8th day of the sacrifices, which if I counted right, that's the 22nd day of the month. Make sense? So they have 4 holy assemblies that month. This is a holy month. And a lot of feasts going on, a lot of celebration going on, starting with the Feast of Trumpets. And now they're dwelling in booths and celebrating the end of their harvest, and offering all these sacrifices. So here are the sacrifices. This is a lot of sacrifices. And so for it is taking the bulls, they go from 13 to 12 to 11 to 10 to 9 to 8 to 7 and then 1. And then of the lambs, they go 2 each one and finally come down to 1. And then they drop the number of lambs down to 7 and keep the number of goats to be sacrificed. Making sense? All right. Any questions or comments on chapter 29? Look at verse 40. Moses told the children of Israel everything. What else do you see? Just as the Lord commanded Moses. Well, I learned a couple of things from that. One is Moses, as a spokesman of God, could rightfully only tell what he'd been told. And us, as you teach your neighbors, I preach the gospel, you teach your Bible class, you teach your children, the only thing we've got a right to teach them biblically is to teach them what God's told us to. Make sense? And they needed to hear everything that God had told them. Questions, comments? Chapter 29. That's true. This is what they do as the congregation, and yet there's still personal sacrifice that they had to offer. I noticed the large number of sacrifices. You think during this feast, you add up all the lambs and all the bulls and all the rams and all the goats. That's a large number of sacrifices. In addition to other sacrifices, and besides other sacrifices, playing on our word, I'm learning from that God expected and demanded a great deal of sacrifice. All right, anything else before we move to chapter 30? All right, let's go to chapter 30. Chapter 30 deals with laws about vows. Two things happen in the chapter. There's a general rule, and then there are exceptions or qualifications given. Great deal to learn from all of that. So let's go to our questions for tonight. And number 6, What is the law concerning vows? I'm focusing really on verses 1 and 2. What's the general rule? All right, exactly. All right, notice at verse 30. Now, this has, again, to do with requirements. We're headed into the land. We're about to cross over the river. And there's some wrapping up of some things to do before we get there. But once we get across the river, Moses is not going. But once you get across, there's some things that come to play. And this is one of the rules. Verse 2, if a man vows a vow or swears an oath to bind himself by some agreement, he shall not break his word. He should do according that proceeds out of his mouth. In other words, he should be a person of his word. He said he would, he does. He says he will, he will. Any New Testament principle that deals with that? I know this is Old Testament law, not binding on us. Is there any New Testament principle? All right. Yeah, Matthew 5:37. Same principle is repeated in James 5, verse 12. Those two passages, let your yes be yes and your no, no. In other words, if I make a promise that I'm going to do something, I say I will, I shouldn't have to put my hand on a Bible and swear that I will do what I said I will do. My words should mean something. I said I will, I will. I said I won't, I won't. I said I will go, I will go. Be a person of your word. God expects it. Now, what I'm learning from this is that God expected a person, when they gave a vow and gave a promise, keep their word. And God was going to hold them accountable for that. But there are some exceptions to that. So let's work through the exceptions. What's verses 3 to 5? What's the exception there? All right. Yes. That if the agreement's made while she's under her father's leadership, under the leadership of her father, and he doesn't do anything. Notice he holds his peace, meaning he doesn't object. He knows it. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't stand in the way. Then she's bound by that. But if her father overrules, verse 5, she is not bound by her vow because she was overruled by her father. Make sense? Now, if I'm learning anything from this, I'm learning something about God's plan from Genesis 3 forward, and that is the male leadership. The husband and the father was the leader. And so the exception to this was, under her father's rule, he leads and overrules her. Once she's married, her husband could overrule her. Does that make sense? There's that leadership role. All right, start at verse 6. This has to do with a woman who made a vow before she got married. And what happens now? She made a rash utterance by which she has bound herself. All right. Yeah, if the husband hears it, makes no response, then she's bound by that. But if her husband overrules, verse 8, then she is not bound by that and the Lord will forgive. Now, verse 9, what about a widow? She doesn't have a husband and she's not under the role of her father. She makes a vow. She bears responsibility. What about a divorced woman? Same verse. She's not married. She's not under her father's house. She bears responsibility. Now, verse 10 through verse 16 to finish the chapter. Here's a woman makes a vow during marriage. She's married now. She's not under her father's house. What about that? Her husband can't overrule her. But if he doesn't overrule her, she's bound and she herself shall stand. Verse 11. But every vow is binding, the text says, but the husband could make it void. Now at verse 14, if her husband makes no response, then she's bound by that. Now verse 15 is a little bit of a question, and that is, but if he does make them void after he has heard them, then he shall bear her guilt. What's that talking about? Well, one or two or three things, or maybe a combination of them. It may be that either he willingly let her make the vow, and therefore he's bound, he bears some guilt, or he delayed in nullifying that he heard the vow, he knew of the vow, he overruled it, but he delayed in that a long time. He bears some responsibility. Or he prevented her from fulfilling her vow, though he didn't object to that. That's one possibility. In other words, she made a vow she would do thus and so, maybe give some money for some cause, help somebody, and he didn't object to that, and she's bound by that before God, and yet he prevents her from fulfilling her vow. Somehow he didn't do his job. That's the point. And he's going to bear some guilt over that. All right. Anything else on chapter 30? Gave his word. Yeah, absolutely. Won't you take a look at verse 6 for a moment? And just a practical thing I learned from verse 6, that it's altogether possible to make rash vows. In other words, we make promises we didn't think through. Have you ever done that? Have you ever said you would, gave a promise, and you didn't think through, and you wished you'd never made that promise? Well, you still made your promise. You said you would. It's kind of like, you know, I'll buy everybody's dinner, and then you check the prices and think, ooh, no, I'm going, no, you said you would. You gave your word, you're going to pay. You just should have thought it through before you gave your word. Does that make sense? Be a person of your word. All right, let's go to chapter 31 now. And chapter 31 talks about the Midianites. Now, this flags back to, or we need to flag a chapter that ties with this, which is chapter 25. All right. So you might want to take make a marginal note if you don't have that marginal notes in your Bible, that verses 1 and 2, Numbers chapter 25. And so one of the things that we should have noted back there, if you don't, this would be a good time to go back and do that. We talk about the harlotry of the women of Moab were involved. But remember the man that brought boldly brought the woman into his tent? Remember that? She was a Midianite. Where did I get that? I got that out of verse 15 through verse 17. At verse 17, because of the Midianites' involvement, God authorized Moses to go attack the Midianites. And so when was that fulfilled? This was not an attack there, I don't think. And now we have another attack. I think chapter 31 is the fulfillment of that over there. Does that make sense? And so this is not chronological order that he told them to do that, and then here's all this other event, then he told them to do that again. This is the fulfillment of that. All right. With that in mind, let's go through chapter 31. They have war with the Midianites. Let's find where the Midianites are, what's going on with the Midianites. This is the Dead Sea, also referred to as the Salt Sea. This is where the children of Israel are, about the center of that, where that little area is, if you can see that. This is about where they are now. And they, the people of Moab were involved, but there were people from the land of Midian, the Midianites. So the Midianites are going to fight with. That's who we're having a war with now. So let's see what happens in the first 11 verses. The Lord instructs them to go and do what? Take vengeance. This is the Lord's vengeance. They're executing the vengeance of the Lord on the people of Moab. So Moses is told, arm yourself with a number of people. So how many people does he get together? 1,000 from each tribe, and then the total is given as being obviously 12,000. So that's given at verse 5. And he gathers them together, and he tells the leaders of each of the tribes, get your people together and let's go to battle. And so they warred against, had war against the Midianites, just as the Lord commanded Moses. All right, so they're executing wrath. Now, this is not a matter of we want to take their land because we want their land. This is God executing them because of what they did to the children of Israel in the sin of chapter 25. Right now, let's talk about those that were killed, verses 7 and 8. Verse 7 says, they killed all the males. There's a notable person here that was killed. There was the kings of Midian are listed, and then there's also somebody mentioned there. Balaam was also killed with the sword. Now then, beginning at verse 11, what'd they do? They took the spoil of the battle. So here we have the spoils. Now we're going to talk about the spoils a lot in chapter 31 and try to settle some discrepancies with reference to that, hopefully. But beginning of verse 11, they took all the women captive and their little ones and took the spoil of their cattle and their flocks. And then they burned their cities with fire where they dwelt and took all the spoil and all the booty, both man and beast. So they took all the women they could and the children they could and their animals and their belongings and basically destroyed the city. So cities, plural. So let's see what they did with the spoils. So they come back, and what do they do in verses 12 and 13? All right. They spared the women and children, and they brought the spoils to Moses and to Eleazar, the high priest. Because remember, someone died earlier, and therefore Eleazar is the high priest. Aaron died and was gathered to his people. And so they brought them, and Moses and the priest were gathered together, and Moses was angry. Why was he angry, verse 14? Yeah. Said, why have you, lost my place. Verse 14, he was angry with the officers of the army and the captains of thousands, captains over hundreds who had come back. And he said, have you kept all the women alive? Look, these women caused. Here's his problem. What's he saying at verse 16? These were the women that caused the problem. These are the very women with whom the whoredom was committed in chapter 25. That through the counsel of Balaam to trespass against the Lord and there was a plague broke out. Now therefore kill every male among the little ones and kill every woman who has known a man intimately. But keep alive for yourselves the young girls who have not known a man intimately. So now let's talk about verses 17. What's the point of that? I think the point of that is that God is trying to protect the morality and the religion of his people. It's not a matter of some commentators have talked about this would be considered a violation of a war act or a War Powers Act, etc. I'm not sure the exact law. In our day and time, you've defeated a country and you've taken some captives, then to go and start slaughtering them. But what God is saying is, this is part of the problem, and actually they didn't follow his direction, so I want you to go in and kill them, because this is protecting the morals of his people and protecting the religion of his people. Does that make sense? And so go utterly kill them. I want you to kill all the males, so we don't have any Moabites raise up, and then you can take these women up for yourselves, and who have not known a man intimately, so they were not part of the problem. Does that make sense? So those that were part of the problem or could have been part of the problem are gone. And all their fighting men are gone. And the young boys are gone. And so they can save the young women. Now what? Verses 17, verse 19 through 24. Yeah, remember earlier in the book of Numbers, there's you become unclean because of the dead body, contamination by a dead body, or touching a dead body, or being around a dead body. If you've been out to war and you've killed someone, you're dead. And so here are the things that are to be cleansed. So in interest of time, basically purify every garment. Only the gold and silver and the bronze and anything that can endure fire, put it through the fire. If not, can't endure fire, then it's to be put through water, purification water. And so both the people and the spoils were to be purified before they could be used and come back into the camp. So that's the return with the spoils. All right, now we got to do something with the spoils. So here we have the division of the spoils beginning at verse 25 to 54. So I'm going to have to hurry through this because I want us to get to 32. So basically what we have here in verses 25 and 26, divide the spoils in half. And half are to go to the men of war and half to the congregation. That's in 25 and 26. That's essential to getting our numbers right, I think. And some of you who are more numbers oriented may correct me on this, but I think my numbers are going to be correct here, I think. Then he tells them at verses 27 to 31, to levy a tribute, which is a tax, on the spoils. All right, and here's what's to be done. There was to be one out of every 500 of the persons and cattle and donkey and sheep. That's 0.2%. And you take that to Eleazar the priest for a heave offering. And then from the children of Israel, you're to take one of every 50, that's 2% of that, and you're to take that and give that to the Levites. All right, now that gets us through verse 31. I think those numbers of 0.2% and 2% is to be of not of the total number, but of the half. And you say, how do you know that? Because that's how the numbers work out that are given in the text. It's going to work. All right. So beginning at verse 32, we have the totals here. Now I want to back up before we look at the totals. We have the totals, then the portion to the Lord and the portion to the Levites, and then we're going to move on from that. Now, Brother Willis in his work takes it coming from the total, and so you have the totals that are given in the text. These numbers we know to be correct. There was 675,000 sheep, 72,000 cows, and 61,000 donkeys, and 32,000 women. And if you take the 2%, 0.2% and the 2%, you have these larger numbers. Well, that doesn't fit with what we find in the text. That doesn't fit with what we have down here at verse 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, and 41. These numbers here fit. So the 0.2% and 2%, one of 500 or one of 50, I think is of the half that was divided between the men of war and the congregation. Does that make sense? And when you get those numbers, these numbers then match what's found right here in the text. So for whatever purpose what that does for us, in other words, of the total sheep, 675 was for the Lord's portion, and 6,750 was the Levites' portion, and you can get the rest of the numbers with reference to the donkeys and the cows, etc. And so that's the division of the spoils. Now, I'm more interested in verse 49. What do you see at verse 49? 48 and 49. Yeah, when they took a reckoning and accounting, not only the spoils, they count the men, and not a soldier's missing. What does that tell you? God's divine provision, providence, protection, however you want to word that, God had protecting them in this battle, which means God gave his divine approval to this battle and this war and the killing of these people. This was part of God's plan. Now then, they gather the jewelry that was taken in the spoils, and there is some 16,750 shekels. And what are they to do with that? Verse 54. Taken to the tabernacle, and it would serve as a memorial. How? I don't know. We're not told. Several speculations. Commentators go everywhere with that. Maybe they did this with it. Maybe they did that with it. We're not told. I'm going to leave it at that. It was taken to the tabernacle, and it was to serve as a memorial. We're going to leave it there. We leave it there because that's where God left it. So I don't know how to go any further with that. All right. Now, let's go to chapter 32 and talk about the tribe settling on the east side. We have about 4 or 5 minutes, and I think we have time to do this. There are two tribes now who come and make an appeal to Moses. What two tribes? Reuben and Gad. Why do they ask to stay on this side? The land looked good, and they have an abundance of livestock, and our livestock will do well here. So can we settle on this side? So Moses at verse 6, beginning through at verse 6 through 15, rebukes them. What's his rebuke? Yeah, you're going to stay over here and let them go to war, verse 6, and you're going to do what our fathers did at Kadesh? Because that's what happened at Kadesh, is some didn't want to go. They didn't want to go fight. They wanted to stay back. And only two wholly followed the Lord. Those that didn't want to go didn't wholly follow the Lord. Look at verse 11. But Joshua and Caleb did. And the Lord's anger turned out. And we wandered in the wilderness for 40 years because of that. He gave them a pretty good tongue lashing, didn't he? I can't believe you. And so they said, can we do this? Verse 16 to 19. What did they say? Yeah, we'll go fight, but can we keep this land? And so we'll go fight until every tribe is settled. Then we'll come back and join our families. But let's leave our women and our children and our livestock on this side. And can we do that? And so Moses responded saying, I'm at 20 to 32, if you do that, just like you said, look at verse 24. If you do according to that which proceeded out of your mouth, that's a vow. Chapter 30, verse 2, isn't it? You vowed you would go. If you do that, you hadn't sinned. But if you don't do that, be sure your sins will find you out. You hear that quoted many times. If you've got a secret sin, it'll get caught. And that's really not the point being made. The point of it is that your sin will catch up with you. You're going to pay a price for that. And so if you don't do what you said, your sin's going to catch up with you, and you'll pay a price for that. But if you do that, you haven't sinned, and you may return. So then beginning at verse 33 through verse 42, we have the division of the land. So it tells us what Gad received and what Reuben received. And then all of a sudden, we have an introduction to something we hadn't seen so far. Somebody else is going to get some land there. Half a tribe of Manasseh. Here's what we're talking about. You see the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea, and the Sea of Galilee, and here we have the Jordan River. So what you have here on this side, that's the land we're talking about. We have Reuben, Gad, and a half a tribe of Manasseh. And they're taking the land that had been conquered from Og and Sihon. Remember those two kings? And so that's what we're talking about. And so they can stay over here on this side. So here is what Manasseh's going to get, half a tribe of Manasseh will get. We'll talk more about that in the settlement of the land when they come back across. And then here is the tribe of Gad, what they would get. And then here is the tribe of Reuben, what they would get. Does that make sense? All right, next time we'll get into the closing of the book of Numbers. And we will wind up, and Moses is right at the end of his life. And we're going to see cities of refuge, etc., but we're winding up the numbers. Yes, sir.
Do we hear anything else about
these tribes?
These two tribes that didn't go over.
Yes, yes, we see more about them. Yeah, they went and fought, and then we're going to see more about them. We'll see more about them building an altar and some confrontation over that altar and some misunderstanding about that. We'll get into that. All right, we're done.